Hi, this is Clinton Stark. Welcome to the Stark Naked Report. Today is December 31st, 2008. This is our last podcast for the year. And as usual, I am joined by my co-host, Lonnie. For today, we're going to talk about The Dark Knight. We just watched that movie and we have our thoughts and comments on that. We're going to talk about the top five things you should do before your next Napa or Sonoma wine country tour. And then finally, being New Year's Eve, we'll talk about resolutions and things we're looking forward to in 2009. Thanks for joining us. This is the Stark Naked Report. Okay, so Dark Knight, we just watched this movie. Everyone's been talking about it. Of course, it's the latest Batman movie. The first was called Batman Returns, which is actually reinventing the series, which started, I believe, in 1989 with the first Batman movie, which, of course, featured Jack Nicholson as the Joker, Michael Keaton as Batman. So we had a chance last night to finally watch it. And Lonnie, what are your first impressions?
Well, actually, at first, I had to stop watching it after 46 minutes.
Well, that's right.
A lot of people told me it was dark, and there was also the death of the actor that played Joker.
Heath Ledger.
Heath, yes. And so there was a lot of rumors and just darkness around the whole entire movie. And after 46 minutes, I just had to stop for a moment because I found it to be very, very dark. Overall, I thought it was a good movie. What's interesting, and I mentioned this to you yesterday as well, was that in these movies, if you look at the James Bond movies, if you look at now this Batman series, the guy doesn't get the girl at the end of the movie.
Right. They're a little more serious now. It's not such a happy ending all the time, is it?
Yeah. And in fact, it's almost this idea that you have to sacrifice your personal desires and wants for a greater good. So here, for example, Batman at the end had to choose, and I don't want to give it away, but had to choose between something that he thought was a more of a betterment of society versus his personal desires.
Right. There's some morality there. Is that what you're saying?
I think.
Right. Yeah. And I think you mentioned dark earlier, and of course, being the Dark Knight. It's dark, not just figuratively in the sense that there's moodiness, there's introspection. There's a lot of that darkness of character, for example. All the characters, you said it when you stopped watching. You said there's no one here to like, really. But I think that's the point. But the other point is it's actually visually a very dark movie. I mean, I think this is one of the darkest movies I've seen in a long time. I can only remember maybe two scenes where it was outside, daylight. Now, that's not a bad thing. I'm not saying that's a bad thing in any means. But a lot of the time, I couldn't tell what was going on.
Yeah.
Maybe I'm just getting older, but it
was definitely really dark and visually, you're right. But also, you were mentioning figuratively, and I just want to highlight one thing. I thought the Joker, it was a really interesting demon that they had in this movie because they talk about him not really having any motivation of wanting anything while he's committing these crimes. He just liked the game.
He admits that.
Yes.
I think later in the, well, we shouldn't give away too much. But.
Yeah. But just the fact that this demon wasn't one, you know, he didn't have the plan to rule the world or anything of that sort. He didn't have a plan. It was just chaos. And in some ways, it really reflects, I think, the demons in our real life, right? The idea that there's a lot of these terrorist attacks in this world that seem really meaningless to sometimes. They seem very sporadic in different locations. And that's what's sort of scary. And I think this movie plays upon the current situation we see in this global world.
Yeah,
right now.
Yeah, I think that's well said. And Heath Ledger did do, because everyone talked about it. The buzz was about Heath Ledger, his role as the Joker. Will there be an Academy Award nomination? And you don't hear much talk about Christian Bale as Batman. But I think he did do a great job of the Joker. I will say that there's no doubt in my mind that he's influenced by Jack Nicholson in 1989's Batman. That Batman that Jack Nicholson did was phenomenal in a different way. He was definitely, say, two scoops of Joker, one scoop violence maybe, where it's the opposite for Heath Ledger's Joker, where it is, like you were saying, maniacal.
I was scared.
Yeah, I know. You wanted to shut it off.
Because he just seemed like a psycho.
Right. Right.
Complete psycho. And I thought there was good writing for Joker as well with the acting. Just the times when he explains how he gets the face he has.
Yeah, don't give it away, but
yeah,
that's interesting.
He describes it in really, really graphic terms.
Right.
And I swear.
Those are creepy scenes.
Yes.
I mean, you don't like horror movies. And there are elements of this movie that are borderline horror-like elements. Mm-hmm. Some of the facial things we've seen.
Psychological violence. That's what I would say. Yes. I think that the physical violence in this movie wasn't the part that made it scary. It was the psychological violence.
It had a moody atmosphere to it as well, and the music was very good. The one thing I didn't like about it, and this is the case with a lot of movies these days, I think, maybe even also Quantum of Solace, which we talked about, the James Bond movie. Too many machine guns later in the movie. I won't give away too much, but there's a lot of machine guns, a lot of broken glass. It's almost like if they run out of things to do, in the next scene we'll have some people jump through some glass and break it, and then we'll have machine gun fire. That may be a little too much of that, in my view. And Christian Bale as Batman, you know, kind of bland. He had that weird voice when he was in the Batman costume.
Well, he had to hide his identity.
Yeah, that's true. Sure, he's got the same face, but when you change your voice.
Yeah, I thought the other part of it was in this movie, you did see some vulnerability of Batman. For example, when the Batmobile completely got crushed.
Oh, yeah.
Right? So there are times when the gadgets won't bail you out. But I would have to say in the ending, I think they had to sort of wrap up the movie and they came up with some interesting ways in which Batman could go after the Joker, which I thought sort of jumped the limit of believable.
The ending?
Yes.
Oh, I thought it was very good. Yeah. I think the ending, it ended on a strong note, I think. That, you know, there was about a half an hour before that where I was starting to, you know, get blinded by all the repetitive action sequences, I would say. But it was very well done. The other thing I like about it is the gadgets are very good, like James Bond. And the other thing I will say, IMDb, I was checking this movie out on there, and it's rated number 4. The number 4 movie of all time, according to IMDb, rated, I think, 9.0 out of 10. And I really disagree with that. You can't have a movie better than North by Northwest or Vertigo. it's an excellent movie, no doubt, but it's not top 4. So I think that, I don't understand how that happened. But that's The Dark Knight. Do you have anything else you want to add?
No, I think it's a great movie to see it.
Would you recommend it?
I would recommend it, but definitely see it with someone else, because I think I would have completely freaked out if I was watching it alone.
I was happy you made it through. All right, the top 5 things that you should do before your next Napa or Sonoma wine country tour. We've been to the wine country many times over the last 10 years or so that we've lived in Silicon Valley. It's only 2 hours away. And I've kind of put together a short list of top 5 things that I recommend to someone who's going there.
Yeah, and definitely since we're also planning our trip this Saturday, Sunday to Napa,
right.
We should actually follow this list.
We're getting off to a quick start in 2009. Let's talk about planning. That's my number one pick here. I'd say don't plan too much and don't plan too little. If you plan too much, you know, you're going to be hurried and you may miss out on some of the spontaneous things that can happen. If you plan too little, then you perhaps will miss some of the things that you really want to see. So I would say somewhere in between.
Yeah, definitely figure out what your goal is for the trip. If you're looking just to sort of take in the sights and sounds, very little planning is okay because everything's along Highway 29.
Well,
right. So you can sort of drive down. Well, if
most
it's your first time
yes,
going,
that's right. That's
Highway 29, you can see quite a number of wineries. Now, if you are a wine connoisseur or you're looking to visit specific wineries, I would recommend planning 4 to 5 wineries that you definitely want to hit.
In one day.
Yeah. And I would consider those to be your landmark wineries. And then that still gives you enough time so that if you see a winery you didn't even know existed or one that you found the exterior to be quite interesting and want to visit, you still have time within the day to do that.
Right. And a couple things to keep in mind. The wine tasting start maybe as early as 10 o'clock. Depends on the winery, but typically 10:30 or 11. Mm-hmm. They end around 4:35 at the latest. So your window is actually quite short. And something to keep in mind is that there's offsets from the winery to the street. And although on a map they may all appear right next to each other, in fact, there probably are, by the time you get in your car, drive, park, and get over to the next winery, it could be half an hour even just to get one to the other.
Yeah. And also during the peak seasons, you're going to get a little bit of congestion on the main highway.
That's right.
And people aren't going to be driving really fast because most people are tourists. And so they're, you know, taking their time leisurely driving from one place to another. So definitely factor that in. Some wineries also have waiting periods before their tasting. If it's crowded, for example,
Peju.
At Peju, we waited almost an hour to get into a tasting.
That's right. I forgot about that.
Yeah.
So build that into your schedule as well. And the final thing is, did we mention already that you have to call ahead and some of them only take it by appointment?
Yeah, some of the boutique wineries, and one that we mentioned on our blog is Camus, requires an appointment. And these are either boutique wineries or ones that are some of the cult wineries as well. You have to do this.
Yeah.
And so calling ahead of time, and this definitely would be one of your landmark wineries.
And don't let that throw you off. I mean, it's very simple. It's like a reservation of a restaurant. You make it, you go there, and it's a great time.
And definitely you can find the information around which ones accept spontaneous tastings and where you have to actually make an appointment on the winery's website. And most wineries have websites.
Buying and storing. So let's talk about buying and storing. Some things that people sometimes don't think about when they go to Napa. And it really will differ depending if you're going in the winter or the summer. When you're buying wines, the first thing you should know about Napa and Sonoma is you're not going to get the deal of the century. Mm-hmm. This is not Costco, and you may think, well, I'm going straight to the horse's mouth, it's going to be a great deal. It's not. In fact, you usually pay retail pricing. But the one thing you will get is the opportunity to buy and I'll taste and buy wines that may not be available in your store or may not be available in restaurants.
Yeah, and usually wineries will have two lists. One's for their more common wines, and the other is the reserve wines. The reserve wines are ones that may only be available at the winery, or they only sell through to restaurants. And so one way to get them is actually to visit the winery. A common example of this is Peju. Their wines are actually only sold through the winery. Now, there's two schools of thought as to what type of wines you buy. Some people like to buy wines that they can actually find in their retail stores so that if they drink it and they like it, they can buy it again. Clint and I, because we live so close to Napa, like to get the wines that we can't get at retail stores. So we tend to go for the reserve flight so that we can get those special bottles of wine for a wine cellar.
And never drink them.
I like to collect them and age them for the
and
record.
And I like to taste them.
The other thing is Clint brought up a great point here, which is around
storing
like of the wines. When you buy them, in the wintertime, you don't have to worry. It's naturally cool.
Temperature's about perfect in the winter.
Yes. Right. In the summertime, think about investing in a cooler or storing the wines in the back seat of your car. Why the back seat? Because oftentimes when you're driving from one winery to another, you'll have air conditioning on. So it's actually going to be a cooler temperature in the back seat of your car than in the trunk. And finally, when you're parking...
maybe you have to kick out your brother-in-law and make extra space.
Yes, definitely. And then finally, try to park in a shaded area when you're at winery. And you'll notice in the summertime, yes, there is a quick dash towards all the shaded tree areas. But try to at least park in a shaded area.
And the final thing is tasting fees range $5 to $20, more typically $20 now. Right?
If it's a reserve tasting.
And you can get a credit for that typically. If you buy some wine, you can credit that tasting to the purchase.
Yes, different wineries have different policies there. Clint and I think it's just a classy gesture when wineries do credit you on the purchase. But that varies.
It varies. Okay, my third idea is a book I'm going to recommend on Napa, or actually it's on wine in general. It's called Windows on the World. And this is an excellent book if you want one resource to read about wine tasting, wine regions, and different types of grapes. It's actually the name of a restaurant that used to be at the top of the World Trade Center. It's obviously been destroyed, and I don't know if they've rebuilt it yet. And it's highly recommended. It's written in a way that's very approachable. It's not hard to understand, and they have some excellent advice on types of wines and actual wineries to visit as well.
Great. And then also, I think, besides, we should post that book on the
blog. Yeah, we should.
Blog.
We should post that one up.
But also the other book, and I can't remember the name of it, but it's one that we use to actually use as a guided tour across to different wineries. And it's a great book. And what Clint and I tend to do is to actually put down the date that we visit wineries and actually write it into the book.
Yeah.
It's great for future planning to know which wineries we actually visit and which ones we haven't. And also it's sort of sentimental to know when we visit the wineries and some of the changes that have happened over the years in Napa.
That's right. Yeah. And, you know, being in tech and marketing, still we don't even use a computer and it works fine. So, and the other thing we do is we bring a portfolio with us with all our notes and our books. And that works well as also.
Yeah, books are just more portable when we're actually in Napa. We do use another program, Cellar Tracker, to actually keep track of the wines in our cellar.
Yeah, we should talk about that another time.
Yeah, and actually one other thing is we do print out a copy of our inventory in our cellar.
Maybe I should have mentioned that under planning. That's a very good point.
Yeah, so that we can actually figure out which wines to purchase, which ones we might want to start collecting verticals of, and which ones we already have.
Right, and Cellar Tracker allows you to do that very easily. And so a good tip on that one. Number four is an often overlooked area, and that is clothing and other things that you should think about bringing before you visit. We went a couple years ago, I believe, and it was very rainy. It was pretty cold. So it was a good thing we brought some rainwear and some warm layers of clothing.
Yeah, it's always good to dress in layers and definitely bring an umbrella, especially if you're going in the winter time. The other thing I think to mention is that it's very casual there, so dress for comfort. Especially for women, I think high heels are not something you wear in
Napa. You don't see it. You don't see people wearing high heels.
Yeah, right? It's better to wear a good pair of nice running shoes or walking shoes, because there are areas that are gravel and there are areas that are rocky, and you're going to just enjoy the trip more if you can walk comfortably in the area.
Absolutely, because you may spend a lot of time actually walking the grounds at the wineries, admiring the landscaping, sculptures. A lot of these wineries have sculptures which are beautiful. And you're right, you will end up doing a lot of walking. It's good exercise. What else?
I think the other thing is, I talk about it being casual.
Yeah.
Jeans are acceptable, even at the nice restaurants. Jeans are acceptable.
It's like Silicon Valley.
Dress for comfort. I think that's it. And also bring a pair of sunglasses if it's the summertime.
Final thing is a very important subject, of course, and that's eating and dining.
Yeah.
And this can be a wonderful thing in wine country.
Yeah, definitely. Napa tends to be an area where it's well known for its wines, but the other part of it is they have fantastic food, because there are, besides the growing of grapes, a lot of local farms in the area. So a lot of these restaurants will source their produce from these farms.
Right, and it's very fresh and it's fantastic.
Yeah, and you have the great pairing with the wine.
So let me make three recommendations into three categories. The first is going to be fine dining. The second will be your everyday nice medium upscale restaurants. And the third would be a picnic option. So let's start with the first, fine dining. And when you talk about fine dining, you talk about Napa, you are talking about one restaurant these days, and that is French Laundry. And if you don't have your reservation already and you're leaving in a couple weeks, forget about it. This one is months to get a reservation, get a table. We've never eaten there before.
We haven't, and it's definitely one I would like to forewarn you and say that it's quite expensive, and it's for those special occasions. You can find out more on their website. We'll have a link to it on our blog. They have a tasting menu, and from the friends and colleagues that have gone there, it is quite spectacular, and it's something definitely to try out.
Everyone talks about it. Okay, now, if that's not going to be possible or fit your plans, then there's some other great options. And the two that I'm thinking of are on Highway 29. They're very close to each other. One's Bricks 26, and the other is Mustard's Grill. And these are both staples of the area, and they're both highly recommended. You can have a casual meal, you can have a formal meal, or you can actually stand and have a drink in the bar area. It's actually a very nice place to be.
Yeah, and with both of those restaurants, if you know you are planning to go to them, call ahead and make reservations. Sometimes it gets quite busy. In fact, one time Clint and I were there, and it took about 50 minutes to actually get a table. And you have to be reminded that people are there to have leisurely meals. So if you don't have a reservation, the wait can stretch on for quite some time as people who are seated enjoying their meals.
My final option is an interesting twist and something you may want to consider. It's the picnic option. And a very commonplace, popular place to go is V Satui. That's a V-S-A-T-T-U-I. And I'll put more information on the blog when I write about it as well. And what I like about it is they have a deli and a cheese bar and baguettes and all this kind of stuff, all fresh. And you can buy wine there as well, take it out to the picnic area, and enjoy a great outdoor dining experience right in the heart of Napa.
Yeah, it's a great experience. And also, if you are there for quite the buying trip, it's a shorter sort of lunchtime. You can grab a quick bite and then be on your way to taste some more wines. One time, actually, I was there in Visatui, and I had been tasting so many wines that by the time lunch rolled around, I just wanted a Diet Coke. So I got some interesting stares, I think, from others in the area, thinking it was quite strange being in wine country and having a Diet Coke.
Yeah, but maybe that's a good way to reset your palate.
Yeah,
it
was just the break I needed in my taste buds before we tasted more Cabernets.
Okay, in our last segment, it would be remiss if we didn't talk about New Year's, because today is New Year's Eve. It's December 31st, 2008. It's been an interesting year, And as we look forward to 2009, of course, let's talk about our New Year's resolutions.
Yeah, New Year's resolutions are always interesting because being a very practical person, I just think that it's strange that, you know, we have such a symbolic association with the New Year's. I mean, you really could begin any of your goals any other time.
Right.
But now that I've gone over my bah humbugness, I do have a common resolution this year. I over the years, and I'll be talking about it in the blog, but over 2008 I've done a lot of business travel. And normally with business travel you eat at a lot of rich, great restaurants. So I've gained about 5 pounds. Now it doesn't seem like a lot, but with me, I always think the philosophy is it's like a snowball rolling down a hill. And so I want to stop it early on. So my first New Year's resolution is to actually lose the excess weight that I've gained in 2008.
Not to mention we were just at Tim Hortons. Well, Harvey's.
Yes, and the Christmas eating.
Christmas cooking.
Yes. So that's my first, and I'll talk a bit on the blog about how I'm approaching this and share with folks my experience.
Right.
So I think another New Year's resolution I have is probably to read more books. So I've been reading some books over the Christmas break, but I had a real long period that I didn't read that many books. And I really think even with all the internet and everything in place, what's great about reading books is it gives you and your mind a break from all that interruptions that you have in your life and have a continuous thought of reading a book from front cover to back, the serial, you know, thinking that's really needed, I think, for deep problem solving.
Right, as opposed to hyper browsing through the internet and stuff like that. So for me, my first one would be, it's cliche, I guess, the gym. So we do go to the gym pretty regularly, but I want to step it up, and I want to stay disciplined, and I want to set some goals around, you know, where I want to be in terms of weight, but also in terms of endurance. So I play some recreational hockey with other marketing folks downtown San Jose. So I want to be able to keep playing through my 40s, maybe even when I hit 50. It's possible.
It is. We have friends that are in their 70s who are in better shape than a lot of people
yeah,
in their 30s.
Right. They eat tremendously well. So that would be one of mine.
Do you have any other?
I'm trying to think about it right now.
It's interesting, actually, because Clint and I do have a tradition where end of year, we will write on post-it notes what our five New Year's resolutions are.
And our goals. Sometimes goals, too, right?
Yeah,
same
and
thing.
And our goals. And I actually, one of the first entries on Stark Silver Creek is about my goals for 2008. So it's sort of, or 2007. So we'll come up with that list and maybe we'll share some of them on our blog. I think sometimes it gets a little personal, too.
Right. You know, I think I did pretty well. I'll talk about one I did well this year. I think I did well with family this year. You know, one of my was to spend more time. Make sure you travel, spend time with family. I think I did a pretty good job of that, and it was a lot of fun.
Yeah.
But it's hard sometimes balancing work and family and everything that's going on.
But they definitely say with goals, it's important to write them down on a list. So Clint and I definitely are going to be spending some time writing our goals on post-it notes, and we may share some of them. Some of them get a little personal.
Yeah, I guess I have to think about mine a little bit more. But okay, well, anyways, this is our last podcast, and we want to thank everyone for visiting Stark Silver Creek.
The last podcast for the year. We're starting up a new program in 2009.
Thank you. Thanks for all your comments, all your feedback on our blog and on our podcast and everything else. We look forward to a big 2009. We've got a lot of plans, and we're going to be exciting to sharing all our stories with you through the year.
Yeah, actually, that's one of our New Year's resolutions, which is to make Stark Silver Creek an even better blog and really sort of develop that community around our blog.
That's right. And you know, I guess I should say one of mine would be to listen to you more efficiently.
Listen to me more efficiently?
Yes.
Oh, that's nice. A sign of
that in there.
Possibly long marriage.
Well, I don't know how we measure it, but that's why maybe it's a good one to have.
I'll rank you.
Oh, I'm sure you will. All right, everyone. Thanks for listening to Stark Nake Reports, December 31st, 2008. I'm Clinton Stark, and I was joined by Lonnie Stark. Have a happy new year. We'll see you in 2009.